Now, pandemics are going to happen because we have human beings and we have diseases. And between the two of them, you know that there's going to be one that the natural systems of the body with our immunities isn't going to be as effective to fight off as others that are more virulent, that are more contagious. And as a result of that, those three factors, got to be a disease, got to be virulent, and it's got to be contagious, transmissible. If you have those factors, guess what? You're going to have a pandemic over time. Now, as we said, we went through all of them that we've experienced. The last one of this scale was the 1918 Spanish flu, which was 100 years ago. So these are not issues that come up every day, but we have to be prepared. And how do we address pandemics? It's through a three-part strategy that we address them. And I can tell you this is a three-part strategy that we address any national homeland security emergency with. These strategies are proven and they work. The first one is prevention. We try to prevent the virus from infecting other people. We try to prevent people from getting it. That's the number one most effective way that you can address not only any pandemic, but any real problem. There's a reason why the old adage goes an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Why? Because if you don't get the virus in the first place, you're much better off. The second issue is response. If somebody does get this virus, if the pandemic is spreading, how do we respond to that? What do we do? First thing, we try to prevent it, but if it does occur, what do we do to respond to it? And lastly, once this virus has infected people and we respond to it, how do we recover from it? That three-part strategy is the best way that we can address not only this pandemic, but any other natural emergency as well. Now, prevention. Prevention is broken down into three categories. Self-help measures, things that we can do to prevent it. Medical measures, things that modern medicine allows us to do it, and community measures. Self-help measures, what are those? Isolation, you prevent contracting the infection by avoiding contact with people who are sick. If you isolate yourself from the disease, you're not going to get the disease. And you can wear protective clothing. You put on that extra line of defense. You wear face masks and gloves and outerwear. You turn around and say, I'm going to prevent that disease from entering my body. You do that from avoiding the sources of disease and by wearing protective clothing and face masks to prevent that. Decontamination is another means by which you can address this, and that is you wash your hands, you clean surfaces where the disease might be present. If you decontaminate and sterilize, you kill the virus and you prevent that virus from coming into you. Now, sadly, we cannot decontaminate our entire world. It is out there, but you can decontaminate by washing your hands, cleaning surfaces that you touch the most often, to better and improve your chances. These are things you can do yourself, all of these. Lastly, you can support your immune system. So if you do get that infection coming in, that your body is best able to fight it off. You live a healthy lifestyle and keep ready natural immune defenses. So you build up those defenses with your natural immunity, your immune system can handle this. You eat correctly, you take vitamin supplements, and as a result of that, your immune system is better prepared to address this issue. Now, you also have medical measures that you can take. Vaccination. Now, there presently isn't a vaccination for the coronavirus, but when one does occur, you can vaccinate to boost up your immune system to be able to take that and defend against it. So your immune system says, oh, I got this vaccine, I know how to address this, and my immune system can kill it so it doesn't come back to me again. It is presently unknown whether you can get the coronavirus multiple times. There's some indication saying you can, and there's some indication saying you can't. It is pretty much undetermined at this point in time. The physicians out there and the medical technologists are saying both things. They don't know. And unknown is not something which is a surprise in something like this. We're on the ground floor of this whole pandemic. So as a result of that, we don't know whether or not you can be reinfected with this virus. Similar to, like, you can build up an immunity to shingles, but you can get shingles more than once. Matter of fact, I've had it more than once, and it's not a fun time. So it depends on the disease, and it depends on how often it mutates, because that's what it's related to. But hopefully a vaccination can be developed. And again, we're hopeful that we can get one by the end of the year, according to all the medical experts. If you do that, perhaps we can have that. So like a smallpox or like a measles, it can be pretty much wiped out. There's also medications you can take to prevent transmission and contraction of the disease. Those have to be developed. They're not there yet, but we can do that. We can develop those things. And you can also have medications to reduce the symptoms of the disease, which can help your natural immunity to build up and prevent. There's also technological strategies that you can to prevent getting the disease. There's things like ultraviolet light. Nanotech technology is being looked into to see if that can be used to combat the disease and prevent its infection. There's, of course, topical disinfection. Topical disinfectant will kill the disease, and that's important. There's also surgical strategies. In certain instances, you can use surgery to remove a pathogen. Though that is frequently used in things such as when you have a fluke or a worm or some kind of parasite, they use surgery to remove it. And there are also other viral infections. If it congregates in a specific organ and that organ is removable, you can take the organ out. So surgical strategies also are a strategy not really applicable, as we know right now, to the coronavirus, but it could be used in other prevention services. Lastly, one of the things that we're doing for prevention is the community measures. We've pretty much done all these and have implemented them against the coronavirus through either government or our social activities. We have provided quarantine. We've remained at home. That would provide prevented interaction with other people. We provide for cancellation and postponement of gatherings. If you're not around a lot of people, you're more than likely not going to raise the chances of you getting this. So the fewer people you have, the fewer people with the disease that you see, the less likely it is that you're going to contract it. We've had travel limitations. One of the things that was the most effective that President Trump did immediately upon seeing that this virus was coming from China was close down all air travel from China. And as a result, that didn't eliminate the virus coming to the United States, but it dramatically reduced the number of infected people coming to this country, and hence the number of carriers that could exponentially increase the number of infections. By reducing that at the outset, we overall reduced dramatically the number of total infections we would have from this pandemic that came from Wuhan, China to start with. And the Chinese did not restrict international treatment out of that area, despite the fact they knew that that virus was being carried there. But President Trump, once he recognized that, and once he was told, immediately shut it down, and hence we reduced the number of possible infections by an exponential amount. Now, response. With response, how do you address it once you know you have it? First and foremost is disease research. You have to investigate. How do you kill this disease? How do you develop a vaccination? What can we do to be able to treat it? How do we develop those? You have a development and distribution of rapid testing. That has to be done in order to know who to treat, in order to know how we can address this. We need to know who has it. It's taken several months, but we're now at the point where, and it's been a remarkably quick upturn compared to other diseases and other situations. It's really a remarkable testament to America how fast we've been able to develop and transform into rapid testing. The previous testing methods for coronavirus, and again we had a SARS virus earlier in mid-2000s, the previous testing methods were slow and arduous and painful. We have developed just in a series of weeks rapid testing, which is highly effective and not painful for the subject matter. That has been remarkable, but that's one of the things you have to do. You have to test more people to see who has it and to see who has had it, antibody tests, to see if that's a way that you can use those antibodies to develop treatments on it. We need to develop and to distribute a vaccine. They're working on that, as we said, and hopefully we'll be able to find a way to achieve that. We also have to discuss disease treatment and mitigation. The medication, such as antibiotics or antivirals or symptom reducers, has to be developed. Right now, remdesivir, which is an antiviral, there's a few medications that have been used for malaria that have seemed to be somewhat effective and successful, but they're not there yet. They've not been proven yet, and because a lot of these things are a factor of time and experience, does this work, and how well does it work, and are there side effects, and are there other ramifications from taking these medications? That takes time, it takes experience, it takes study, and we just haven't had that yet, but that has to be developed. And maybe we can find a cure for this disease. Maybe we can find a way that we can treat it so that when you get these effects of this disease, it's not so debilitating. Hospitalization is another treatment, and the delivery of the care by the physicians, nurses, and caregivers on the front lines is so critical. It's why Governor Cuomo and President Trump actually partnered together to be able to dramatically increase the hospitalization and medical facility of New York City, principally. They brought in the United States Comfort Medical Ship into New York Harbor, which originally was only supposed to handle patients who didn't have coronavirus, who were emergency patients, but they realized that the hospitals were being so overwhelmed that they actually converted that ship to be coronavirus patients and take them on. Similarly, the Army Corps of Engineers ramped up construction with respect to the Javits Center and made that convention center into an enormous hospital which focused on coronavirus patients. So you were able to take on the huge hospitalization numbers by means of these response methods. Lastly, medical technology has to be responded with. You have to have respirators, you have to have what we call ventilators, tenting, treatment, dispensers. All of these things have to be distributed together with things that will prevent the transmission. Things like gloves and masks and all that have to be distributed in a response methodology, not just in a prevention, because you can't have your first responders being positive for the disease because they'll transmit it back to other people. And we have seen that in a nursing home scenario whereby Governor Cuomo allowed positive patients, matter of fact, mandated that positive coronavirus patients be treated in nursing homes, which provided a astronomical rate of not only transmission in nursing homes, but sadly an astronomical rate of death in nursing homes. Why was that? Because a lot of the medical professionals said the best thing to do is to treat them in place. And sadly, a lot of us who were in the political realm listening to the medical professionals, well, guess what? They were wrong. And as a result now, Governor Cuomo reversed that decision, which I think is a wise move. And now patients from nursing homes are transported out of that facility so that they are not infecting the other residents, because you have a much higher rate of mortality with people who have comorbidity, and the older seniors who are in these nursing homes tend to have those diseases. So it's a problem, and you know, that's one of the things you have to look at. The support responses, community government information services. Information is critical at this time. We have to have information flow between government and the community out to the population. So we know, hey, avoid New York City. New York City has the highest rate of infection right now. Don't go there. That is not only a factor of government closing different outlets to people, but also that the public says, hey, it's really bad there. I'm not going to go there. And that helps people to self-modify their behavior. Community government support services also provide for food and shelter availability. When somebody has to leave their home because there's too many infections there, health care services, obviously we have to treat people who have coronavirus, and that's a critical thing to do, and we have to make that available. Sanitation has never been so important. We have to not only make sure that our living space, our working space, any place where medical treatment is being delivered is sanitized and clean. We have to dispose of all the medical waste, the paper waste, anything that we use to do that cleaning, which is filled with the virus, to get out of there. And sanitation workers don't get enough support, and they are on the front lines of this. Few people ever think of them. And they are to be heralded as much as nurses and doctors, who have done an incredible job during the course of this. But sanitation workers and first responders, our police and firefighters and EMS workers, should all be heralded for what work they've done. They've been selfless. And I'll tell you, another area is the military, because the military has provided more help and assistance in this than you could ever imagine. And you know what? It shows the value of the American military. They are good, hardworking, honorable, honest people, and they've done so much good on this during the course of this. Obviously, lastly, in addition to our public protection services that I just mentioned, you also have burial and funeral services. Because of the fact that in any pandemic you're going to have a number of people who pass away, you have a situation where they are providing critical services too, and also exposing themselves, because this virus can live in people after they have died. And as a result of that, they have to maintain the same levels of security that a physician or a doctor or a nurse or a healthcare professional is treating that patient. Recovery is equally important as the prevention and the response. We need to do continued medical research and investigation. Why? Because you have mutations of this disease. It can change. We know that. We've looked at it before. SARS-1 is not the same as SARS-2. This virus will change, and we have to continue to stay on top of it. We also have to continue production after the level of deaths decrease, and after the virus burns itself out to a certain degree naturally, we have to continue the production and distribution of disease, vaccines and testing and treatment and medications. It's not just at the time when people are sick, but as the people who are sick slow down in new cases, we also have to continue that in case there's a second wave or a third wave that comes on this. Because as we said before, with respect to the 2018 Spanish flu, the additional waves were every bit as bad, and in some cases worse, than the first one. So we have to stay on top of this. Medical recovery. You have continued medical research and investigation. Economic recovery. You know, President Trump has said numerous times that you have had an issue with respect to whether or not at the end of all this will the actions we've taken to save lives and prevent all the suffering that could be happening, will it be as viewed as worse than the disease? If you have right now, because of the actions that have been taken by government, you have one of the worst craterings of our economy that we've ever had. There's literally 20 million people who've been thrown out of work as a result of this. We have the highest unemployment rate since the time of the Great Depression because of the actions we've had to take to be able to prevent the spread of this disease. We have to make sure that we have an economic recovery, because the economic damage that we suffered, as President Trump said yesterday, is an artificial damage. It's temporary. It's one that was caused as a result of this virus and our reaction to it. So it wasn't anything as a result of our natural economic cycles. It was self-imposed. And we have to come back. We have to get people back to work. We have to reopen our economy. The president and all of our governors are working on that. We have to support business normalization and their opportunities. We have to provide support for employment normalization and opportunities. And lastly, we have to also have to provide financial support. Now, Congress has done that through programs like the PPP, the Payroll Protection Plan, and other actions that they've used to try and support people who were thrown out of work. We've dramatically increased things like unemployment insurance, although in the state of New York we've had a lot of problems with it, and it needs to have a system which is run better. But we need to be able to promote that resurgence of the economy to get these individual states and individual regions back up and normalize it. We can't, as the president says, have football stadiums where people are sitting every other seat, every other row. That'll never work. And Americans, and human beings for that matter, need physical contact. We need to be in groups. We need to have restaurants that are fully open and fully available. Now, there's a lot of talk about whether or not there will be a new normal. And to that extent, no other pandemic in history has ever had that, including the Black Death. You have not had a situation where people would no longer interact at all forever as it went forward. So as a result of that, the new normal is going to be old normal. And the challenge that is for government and society is to bring back society the way it was, not the way it was during the pandemic. And we have to do everything we can to reduce the spread and the incidence of the pandemic, but also make sure that it's something we put in the rearview mirror. Societal recovery to that regard provides for resumption of social interactions and events. People are people. And as a result, as human beings, we need to be able to touch other people. We need to shake their hands. We need to give them hugs. We need to be able to interact with them in a close, proximate area. We want to be able to sit in a baseball stadium and cheer for our team and hear the roar of the crowd. We can't turn around and have a movie theater where we're the only person in it. You have to have these societal things that resume what human beings need, which is social interaction and contact. And in addition, we need to resume travel, not just for the side of resuming it for tourism and for personal enjoyment, but travel is also an elixir for business. And we live in a global marketplace, and travel is indispensable to modern business. We need to be able to resume it. We need to be able to get on an airplane again and not have to worry that we're never going to be able to breathe again after we get off because we will have contracted. We need that human interaction. We need that human touch, and we need to resume that. Now, we have, as we discussed originally, a number of entities that are responsible for addressing this pandemic. The United Nations has an entity known as the World Health Organization that we didn't discuss previously. The WHO, sadly, has proven itself throughout the course of this pandemic, which it could have been one of the best leaders in it, to be actually nothing but a political organization that has really steered and screwed this up beyond belief. The WHO is an organization, just like so many of the United Nations, that has faltered. And it has shown itself to be really a shill for the Chinese government, which tried to engage in a major cover-up. We'll discuss that momentarily. But at the end of the day, the WHO cannot be believed. They lost all integrity during the course of this. And whether or not they'll be able to get it back again, the fullness of time will be able to see that. Presently, right now, they pretty much are not respected by any physician or government that really looks to try and see how we can address this healthcare emergency. The federal entities, on the other hand, have never seen a greater hour. And they've really done a magnificent job in keeping not only the people safe, but also the American public informed on things. The Health and Human Services, which is the umbrella agency under Secretary Azar, has really come to the forefront. All of their underpinning organizations like the Office of the Surgeon General has done an incredible job. Jerome Adams, you've seen the National Institutes of Health, which we discussed earlier, under Francis Collins, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases under Dr. Fauci has been incredible. Anthony Fauci has been one of the principal people involved in this effort to combat the coronavirus, and he's become really an American hero. You've had the Centers for Disease Control with Dr. Redfield, who incidentally yesterday has taken into quarantine because he's worried he's been exposed to the virus, but he too has marshaled the resources in the United States to really try and combat this. We talked at length about the Food and Drug Administration and Commissioner Hahn, what they've been able to do, and particularly their fast-tracking of the virus and all the medications. And you've had the Health and Resources Services Administration under Thomas Engels, who has provided more ventilators and more personal protective equipment than could ever have been imagined in American history. And we're now at the point where we're giving them to other countries as well because we've been able to produce them. The president gets a lot of credit under that too. He's mobilized under the Defense Production Act, which was a 1940s act that allowed us to put ourselves on a war footing. Well, this was a war, and as the president has said numerous times, it's a war against an invisible enemy, and we've been able to mobilize on that basis, primarily through the HRSA, to be able to get the technology and the services that our hospitals and first responders need. We've also been very active through what is known as CMS, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, who've provided financial support primarily to hospitals. And they've also provided regulatory support through hospitals. And as a result of that, they keep the hospitals working and the hospitals flush with the resources that they need. They've proven a very serious player in this and somewhat unheralded. We've also had a quiet entity on it, which has done incredible work for us in the Department of Homeland Security. They've been active on this, not only their acting director, Chad Wolf, but also their deputy secretary, Ken Cuccinelli, who's done an incredible job and who has been able to marshal a lot of the forces and interfaces with an organization which is 280,000 employees that has been able to help. Everything from border security and being able to do things like prevent spread through the TSA and things of that nature, to being able to marshal all of their underling agencies in Homeland Security to be able to prevent any other types of emergencies occurring during the course when we're preoccupied by this. And lastly, and I think perhaps most effective, has been the face of this pandemic with the response on it, is the President's Coronavirus Task Force. Not only have you had the President himself, who's been part of the press conferences, but also the Vice President, who's been a voice of reason and quiet calm throughout the course of this. He's a person who gets things done, but also one of the superstars that we've seen evolve, who's Dr. Deborah Birx, who is ambassador, actually, for the State Department. But Dr. Birx, who is a very experienced medical practitioner for decades, even though she doesn't look it, is the coordinator of the President's Task Force and has done a remarkable job, not only in making decisions that the President has thankfully followed, but equally is informing the public of why we need to do certain things and to bring on public acceptance on this. On the state level, you've also had a state action team, which has been led in large part not only by the governor, who's obviously the executive, just like the president has done it on the federal level, but you've also had the director of the Division of Budget, Rob Mujica. You've had the commissioner of health, Dr. Howard Zucker. You've had our Division of Military and Naval Affairs, who is General Raymond Shields, who has activated our National Guard to help on all of the response efforts. You've also had our Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Services, who's run by one of the most talented and capable people in all of state government, and that's General Patrick Murphy, who has used all of our resources within the public protection and homeland security field to be able to respond everywhere across the state with respect to everything that is needed under a coronavirus emergency that we've had. And lastly, we have the executive chamber, three people there who have been very active in all of this. And the first is Melissa DeRosa, who's the secretary of the governor. The second is James Molatris. He is a earned PhD and he's the head of Empire State College, but he's also a special advisor to the governor. There is no person other than the next person of Beth Garvey's, the council of the governor. Those two people, and I would dare say with Rob Mujica, are three of the most talented people in all of not only state government, but in the United States. Rob Mujica is a genius who is able to take on any mission and accomplish it beautifully. Elizabeth Garvey is probably one of the smartest people, not only an attorney, but one of the just overall smartest policy people in the United States, a very gifted person who is not only, she came out of the New York State Senate as chief counsel, now as counsel to the governor, And James Molotras, who's been involved in state government for decades, is probably one of the smartest people in all of not only government, but in the state, capable of taking on any mission that is given to him. Dr. Molotras is a remarkable person and someone who can basically achieve great things, and it's why the governor has such confidence.